from our dusty cellars. If you're going to list the ultimate comfort foods and not include styrofoam peanuts, I'm not sure you should even be working at BuzzFeed. It's the final countdown.
Ah, Manus. Excellent.
I'm Manus Cronin, joining us this week as always, chalking all negative comments down to classism because he's class, Gavin Carpenter.
Hey, thought that was going to be about James, actually about me.
He got the wrong idea completely when you pointed to your lips and asked to borrow his chapstick. James Belfast.
Hey.
Good.
Yes, good. Excellent.
And his favorite country is Bangladesh because it has Bang Lad right in the title. Jack Toner.
Happy Cricket World Cup.
We'll have a different joke for every team in the Cricket T20 World Cup every week coming up on the final countdown. And if you believe that, this is the first time you've listened.
Every week.
We don't even do that when we mean to do it. Not even when it's a...
No, we have a Gavin's game this week, don't we?
Yeah, and we're going to get to that interview. We're going to get to that interview, that in-depth interview about the drag community with all those drag acts that we got in touch with. We're going to get to that interview. Tomorrow.
I mean, that's the best thing about tomorrow. It is only a day away. So, I mean, theoretically, you only have to wait one day.
Yeah.
But in reality,
it's a long day, is what we're saying. You know, there's a lot of songs about that sort of thing. And we'll list them next week on the final countdown. On the agenda this week, a better use for Island's Edge. And throw it in the bin now.
No, they're not.
One did remind me of the other, and you might argue throw it in the bin now that they could be related, but they're not. But before we get into, we had people were away, people did things, we could talk about that. Obviously we'll have in-depth coverage of the T20 World Cup coming up later in the episode. You could chalk that down, 100% going to happen. We're going to do that, but before we do, it's time to get introduced to the beers brought along this week by everyone individually. So let's see if they match.
I have a feeling I have the wrong one. Yeah, I do. I don't have that one. I've got Walk the Night by Whiplash.
I think maybe I also have a different one for my name.
The system works.
You know what?
Wait, we have that one. At least we've had that one.
We have had that one before, James. Yeah. I think I just couldn't get your one, Gav. I think I was a beer short and we just forgot that. So when I said, we'll take the 8%er, there was more than one option.
Yeah, it was only when I looked at the percentage of Whiplash's Walk the Night, an India Pale Ale, did I notice that it's 6.6% with a smooth finish. But yeah, listen, we don't know which one's canon. We'll all give scores. They all count for nothing. And that's just true.
Do you have this
every
one?
Week?
If you do, I just won't have it. I'll have it next time. Northern Monk.
I think I might have. I'll check. But no.
I feel like we have that one. I feel like we had that one on the show, didn't we?
Northern Monk. What? I'm already sitting. It's already cold. Yeah. What more could we want?
Yeah, I don't know. Some basic planning, but I mean, whatever. You know.
So first things first, I'll need a flake with this one. The head is gigantic. That's a lot of head. I'll be sipping this for weeks. But it looks okay. It either passes or fails the finger test. It is very opaque. It's light in color, very hazy, lovely head. I'm imagining there's going to be a full body on this. It smells like I haven't had a sense of smell since kind of October 1st rolls around, which is true every year, but I'm looking forward to this.
Gav does like to balance out my sober October with his do cocaine every day during October, which really affects his sense of smell. I didn't know what he was referring to there with the 1st of October thing.
I was worried running Oct-COVID.
Oct-COVID, yeah.
And it completely lost the sense of smell and taste, but just assumed it was the usual reason.
I'd say probably has the coronavirus. I'd say probably. Remember that? It was a fun thing to say for a week. Whoa, better put on a mask there. We'll be back.
Anyway, yeah, see you guys in 2 weeks.
Hope the fridge isn't full of virus, you know, if I drink this 2 weeks away, by which I mean Corona beers, you know. I hope they don't have a Heineken virus, or they don't call them pubs.
Now, Fionn, when you said, remember when we were all saying this, do you have a memory of us all saying this?
I do. Mr. Yes, Mr. President. The presidential award for the greatest coronavirus joke goes to Fionn de Burka. Thanks, Mr. President, and that is the correct pronunciation. Most people have been getting it wrong, myself included. Can I pet the dog? Not a euphemism. You have two large dogs. And it's a euphemism. Does anyone taste their beers? Does anyone care?
I finally tasted my beer. My beer is absolutely delicious. It looks like a super split and it tastes really fruity, really zesty, really citrusy, really nice. It's a 6.6, which like isn't a blow your head off kind of beer. But this just feels very drinkable to me, but not something that I'd like end up sculling. It doesn't like hide the alcohol completely. It's got a really nice body. It's like velvet almost. And yeah, I'm very into Whiplash Walk the Night.
I am middlingly into, at first taste, the Eternal Haze Double Dry Hop Double IPA. It's the double. It's called Northern Monk. No, it's Eternal Haze by Northern Monk. It's like it's 8%. It's very cloudy. It's not awash with flavor in the early sips. I will say that it is doing a great job of putting 8% alcohol in my body and me being pretty cool with that.
Sometimes that's what you need.
Sometimes you just need someone to just not tell you that, not be upfront with you. You need someone to ghost the hooch into you.
That is what Mick Jagger was singing about when he said that if you try, sometimes you get what you need. He didn't specify, but he did mean sometimes you get drunk. He was going through a phase. It looks like a Baraka. It doesn't even look like a beer.
Yeah.
It doesn't taste like a beer either.
Okay.
You just get Baraka.
Yeah, guys, can we just do a quick... I've been taking Baraka since like it started to get darker in the evenings. I'm not sure why those are related. But what is Baraka?
Well, Gavin, funny that you say it. It's an invigorating effervescent mix of all the B and C vitamins you need to make you look...
If you go by the ingredients, it's far too many vitamins.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem to really work.
Now, I was like, as part of my like, you know, I'm not sure on the whole vitamin supplement steez. All right. I've been told to take vitamin D because Ireland doesn't get that much sun and it's absolutely miserable and I stay indoors all day pulling my plum. Doctor's orders. But I was taking Baraka and then vitamin B. And let me tell you what color my urine was. Bright yellow.
Wait, you take Baraka every day. I was under the impression that Baraka was a little bit more medicinal because does it have like caffeine in it?
I think it has caffeine in it, but like you'd have a coffee in the morning.
Yeah, that's Baraka Boost, Jack. They don't all have caffeine in it, but Baraka Boost does have caffeine in it.
Okay.
As does the Boost bar.
Yes. You can taste the caffeine.
It does. You can taste the caffeine in that.
I always saw Baraka as more of a hangover tool instead of a daily
It does
thing.
Have... Well, yeah. See, I suppose, because I lived in London, not sure if I've mentioned it before, my go-to hangover aid was Alka-Seltzer. And Alka-Seltzer XS, flavorless or whatever, just normal Alka-Seltzer, which is absolutely delicious, gets you right as rain. Unfortunately, they can't sell that in Ireland for whatever reason. So they just have regular Alka-Seltzer, lemon flavor, which A, tastes like the devil's piss, and B, doesn't have that sweet, sweet caffeine that you need. So it makes you feel even more like shit, I would say.
Yeah. And it doesn't make you look right either, to tell you the truth. I had I had a hangover cure that was foolproof, which was for 10 years I didn't sober up. And I never got sick once during the whole time.
Never got sick once.
Yeah, I started on like taking Barocca regularly earlier this year, as well as a few other vitamins. And for a while, it worked brilliantly. There was like a 1 month period, sort of this summer, where it's like literally waking up at like 6:30 every day and like wide awake, no grogginess, just up, ready to go. And then it just stopped. And I went back to sleeping normally, even though I'm still taking all the vitamins. So I don't know how to get
so that your body just got used to it, and now it needs more. Yeah.
Well, so now I need to stop the vitamins again for like 2 years, and then I can get one good month out of them.
You just got to time it right. I mean, if you time it right. I mean, like, the World Cup's every 4 years.
Yeah.
So you know that. And like, if you play enough football and drink your Barocca, who knows? You could make the team.
Could make the team.
Yeah.
I mean, for university challenge or something. I don't know. Something that's suited to some of your athletic capability. I don't know. There probably is something, though. You probably were deficient in those vitamins, and then your body reacted quite well to no longer being deficient. But like, from anything I understand about vitamins, which is quite a lot. I mean, I am a doctor.
Yeah, yeah. We don't mention that, but you are a doctor.
I am a doctor, a public health expert, epidemiologist, and all around nice guy. And none of those things are true, but that's not the point. They're kind of binary. It's like you either have enough or you don't. So there's a huge benefit to having way more. And particularly you pee those out, right? That's why it doesn't matter how many of them you take.
Manus, trust me, I could see the vitamin B, and I was peeing it right out.
Right away, yeah, you know.
From 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., I was peeing that B out.
You're peeing the B? You're flipping that upside down?
The B.
You're just flipping that letter upside down.
If you can drink, like, I used to just spend, certain days, weekdays and weekends, as it were, drinking can after can of Ruby Red Guinness, marveling at my kidney's abilities to get that clear. I mean, it was just remarkable. It never once came out black. So whatever is our kidneys.
I like that your alternative was black.
Well, you know,
well, that's got black one healthy orange. We know it's
way. Yeah.
Some are so good. You know, it's really a ruby red when you hold it up to the light. Well, okay. Well, first of all, I don't hold my pee up to the light. I just sort of squint at it to see if it's the right color. You know.
Mattis, I also love your being so impressed by your kidneys. Whereas I'd say, like, what? 95% of Guinness is water?
Yeah, but they take the black color, like, right out.
Put
it into my cheeks in the form of ruddiness.
Oh, but the rud.
My point is, like genuinely, probably a good 15 years of, like, putting everything in and it just pees it out clear. And, like, one Barocca. And it's like, no, not dealing with whatever that color is. No, that goes right out with us. We're not filtering it. Woof. What I'm saying is, wake up in the morning, have 12 or 13 cans of Guinness and fall back asleep. And time will fly. And your kidneys will thank you later. They will thank you later.
Yeah.
Chase it down with some whiskeys. You're not a complete lunatic, you know. For the good of your health, chase it down with some whiskeys.
Yeah, there's a lot of volume in that Guinness. You could just be a lot quicker with the whiskeys.
What a thin it out with the whiskeys.
But like, you don't have to do Guinness. I believe you could also do it with Island's Edge, unless there's another use for it.
There is, in fact, good segue, Gavin. Good segue. There is, in fact, a much better use for Island's Edge than drinking. And don't drink it, because it's not good.
Have you tasted it since it's released?
Yeah, well, we had it on the show when you weren't here.
You were gonna potentially try the draft version or something. There was some twist.
I did try the draft version, and it's terrible. It's absolutely
see, because that was the thing that everyone saw, because we didn't really think that the canned version was really that bad, and like apparently the draft version was worse. We had
the draft version together, Gav, and basically sent it back.
Yeah. Could only get halfway through it. It was weird. It was awful, awful, awful. But like, go on.
The can was just aggressively mediocre. There was a bit of a funny taste to it, but it wasn't like send it back bad. But and because they sell it in 4-packs in my local shop, I was like, what the fuck do I do with these other 4 cans of Ireland's Edge? And you know what I did? I cooked a corned beef in them yesterday.
Hello! That is innovative.
Gotta say, probably the nicest corned beef I've ever had.
Supposed to be a little bit sweeter. Yeah, man.
I often throw whatever beer is like lying around in with the corned beef.
We usually use an extra stout. We usually use the bottle Guinness for the ale.
See, I couldn't bring myself to have that in the house and not just drink it. So
yeah.
I know you gotta buy the morning.
Whereas Ireland's Edge sits there month after month waiting to be used.
There is a little corner of shame in my house, and I might take a picture of it someday, of the beers that I've just been there forever. There's cans of Kilkenny Nitro Red.
I thought you were gonna say, man, of the socks.
Is there a fax?
I've still got it. It's actually not, it hasn't made its way down to the corner because it's still up here in my room as a conversation piece, because this is where I bring people to converse. But yeah, the big kind of facts, I could lay my hand on it now if I wanted to, untouched, because I got 2 of them, and one of them obviously went down the sink and the other one's over there. Can't bring myself to throw it out. Might want to cook a ham in it someday, you know.
But try it out. Because it almost seems like Ireland's Edge. Like, I found what was strange about the draft version, I'm not sure if this is true about the canned version, is that it's just slightly sweeter than any other stout I'd had before, which makes it terrible for drinking, but I would say perfect for cooking, because part of what you want, alcohol is in essence a sugar itself. So you're looking for an element of sweetness when you cook it, you know?
Are
you laughing at Dr. Gav, man?
No, I mean, obviously, I'm only laughing because, I'm just trying to think. First of all, I was like, it's clearly not a sugar. But then I thought, it sort of sounds like sorbitol, which is kind of a sugar, right? So maybe it is a sugar. Maybe I'm the one who's wrong. But isn't it definitely not a sugar?
It's ethanol instead of
it's fermented sugar.
We're all carbon-based life forms, I think. It's carbon-based.
Yeah, hold on. I have a laptop in front of me. So time to do research that only supports my claim and not mention any research that supports yours.
So yeah, just Google alcohol is...
Got it. The Bill Burr joke of go to imright.com and just find whatever fucking supports you. But wasn't there... What made me laugh was that it reminded me of... Wasn't there a Fox News piece when they were talking about waterboarding, or they were talking about they were talking about mace, and a policeman had maced some protesters, and there was someone describing what it was, and the Fox News person went, "So a food ingredient, essentially." alcohol's basically a sugar, right? You know.
So yeah, I'm wrong, I believe. Yeah. I'm struggling to find anything that supports my case. An alcohol drink contains ethanol, which is
like Gavin's wording was, I'm struggling to find anything to support my case, and not, oh no, I think I was wrong.
No, this is what people mean when they say follow the science. It means listen to whatever we say, even if it's wrong.
No, an alcoholic drink is a drink that contains ethanol, a type of alcohol that is produced by fermentation of grains, fruits, and other sources of sugar. So, it's a product of sugar, but I don't think it's sugar itself.
Yeah, well, look, a temper tantrum is ultimately a product of sugar in its
bottle. Yeah. Oh, very good.
No, you know, actually, they've done studies, and, you know, it doesn't actually really have that. I don't care why it has that effect, but it does have that effect. Well, you know, really, it's probably a case of overstimulation. Yeah, from the delicious sugar that they get to have. And now they want more of it. Now they're tired, you know? And they're very crying. And at a certain point, when a toddler is screaming and crying, you really have to investigate to see if their foot has fallen off or if they just want sweets. It's the same noise.
And it's funny how the solution to both is give them sweets.
Give them some sweets, yeah.
Give them some sweets.
Yeah. They could have a missing limb, and if you like give them a fucking dip dab, they'd be like, "Oh, it's fucking dead, isn't it?" Yeah, I mean, this is bad.
You could replace their forearm with a dip dab, and it will be gone again in 10 minutes.
Yeah, they would,
I need you to not ruin. I need you to not once again have no arm by eating it.
Fully functional hand replacement, entirely anatomically correct and useful, but it's made out of the thing that the dib dab stick is made out of. And all they have to do to keep this forever is to not use it as a sort of sugar scoop to say that lick. And it's 100% of the time that hand is gone.
Sorry, I got lost down a kind of Wikipedia rabbit hole for 2 seconds. And I come back to this dib dab nonsense.
It's not nonsense.
It's not nonsense. It's parenting advice.
It's how, listen, and we have several kids that we're not allowed anywhere near because of restraining orders. But the fact is, we know about kids.
Yeah.
We have to know where they are at all times.
You know? Yeah, legally we have to know where they are, but aren't allowed to be near them.
Yeah, I'm living off what's...
How else are you going to stay away?
I'm living off a relatively new legal structure called reverse child support, where she pays me not to be involved.
Yeah.
And if you,
I'm on a similar thing where I steal from the children.
Yeah, that's the same.
I mean, it's very similar when you take their things because they're small and they can't defend themselves. And no one would see now people will believe the children if they tell them.
Yeah.
That they're doing nowadays,
something. I know. But the thing is, like, people think that you're just taking the children's toys just to have them for yourself, as though like you've got some stuff. No, you're pawning them.
Yeah.
So that you could buy things for yourself.
Like, yes. So I'm not using their toys, obviously. Yeah. I'm not a fucking psycho. I'm pawning them to buy things I want. And as well, it's not just so I can have things I want, okay? There is there is an enjoyment in that they don't have them.
Yeah. And it's not like a weird sexual thing. Except for the odd time that it is. But like, that's like...
If you give your child something so indistinguishable from a dildo that I take it and I use it, all right? That is on you. That's not my problem. You need to go to parenting college. Otherwise known as IT talent.
And you know what? Taking what the kids want to improve you is actually giving the kids what they need, which is a better parent.
They're always saying, listen to the children. We should listen to the children when they tell us things. And I'm for it. And he was telling me that that Game Boy was tremendous fun. And I believe him. And I took it for my use. I know we started this by saying I wasn't actually using the toys, but we weren't talking about Game Boys.
But yeah. I remember, like, the best piece of parenting advice I ever read was, I think Bruce Lee said, don't give your kids the things you never had. Teach them the lessons you never learned. Mm. And the lesson that I'm teaching is don't trust your dad. And I should have learned that ages ago.
And two things. Bruce should have taken some of his own advice, except it was don't give him aspirin, because apparently he didn't survive that whole encounter. And secondly, when I take it, it's a game man. Okay, game man. Was a mere boy. It's been upgraded.
There was some aggressive branding of things as boy back in the 90s. Game Boy, Talk Boy,
Virtual Boy,
Disc Boy, Virtual Boy. Was that because a lot of parents were stealing their kids' toys and claiming they're for them?
100%, and that was the 90s, so people weren't believing the kids.
Yeah, of course. Back in the good old days.
Also born in the 90s, most current fuckboys.
Yeah, true.
It's a true fact.
Manus, and day after day, that's becoming less and less true.
Of course, the proper fuckboys like, are born in like 2020 now.
Yeah, like 21 is your prime fuckboy days, I think.
We're fuck men. We are fuck men. Hey, ladies, when you're sick of dealing with all those fuckboys, why don't you get the slightly saggier, more jaded version? Fuck, man. That's right. We're not as good at it anymore, or were we ever before, to be honest. The fact is, yeah. I'll pretend I'm not as good at it anymore. Fact is, I'm as good as I've ever been.
And man, the thing is, whereas a fuck boy will just tell you what you want to hear, I, as a fuck man, don't really understand what you want to hear because I've stopped listening to you.
I will be listening to the Eagles.
I'll be listening to the Eagles. In many ways, a fuck man is much, much worse, but more honest.
Yeah. And isn't that simpler what nobody wants? Didn't we figure that out last week? Well, I wish you had the ball to say it to my face.
Nah. No, you don't.
you'd hate the world in which that was true. And I know this because I've tried saying it to your face.
Manus, is there going to be another batch of cooking with Island's Edge? Like, what would an Island's Edge and kidney pie, a steak and kidney pie with Island's Edge look like?
That might look like your dinner because I won't be eating kidneys.
I know.
No, I think you're absolutely right. That like either a beef stew or a steak and kidney pie or something is crying out for a bit of experimentation.
Manus, you seem like the kind of
brown bread.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or something of that description. Like Guinness kind of had that locked down. But now that Island's Edge is like available, Island's Edge is like the cooking wine of the stout community, you know?
I mean, we owe it to the world to find out if it has a function. I mean, because it could be like, we don't want to be like doctors in the early part of the 20th century, where like we realized the appendix was causing a problem, couldn't figure out what it did. So just said, you know, we should just take that out of healthy people. Whip it out. It was all you could do to keep your large intestine if a doctor opened you up in those days, because they didn't know what it did. So they just went, fucking whip it out. Think about all the extra space you'll have in there. Well, I'd hate to remove Island's Edge from the world without figuring out what it's for first. Chesterton's fence of approaches to dealing with wildly unpopular and unasked for stout brands.
You've mentioned Chesterton's fence before, I think, on this podcast.
UK law theorist G.K. Chesterton. And the fence is just like, it's a hypothetical story in which people encounter a fence in the middle of a road, and the overzealous reformer looks at it and says, well, I can't figure out what that's for. We should get it out of the way quick. And the sensible conservative, you can see what kind of guy G.K. Chesterton probably was. The sensible conservative says, no, sir. On the contrary, first you must explain what it is, and only then may I permit you to remove it. Which, first of all, I mean, these just guys just happened upon the fence. Why does one guy get to say when it goes away? You know?
Wait, where's G. Chesterton from?
G.K. He's G.K. I actually think he might be like Duke of Wellington type Irish. I'm not even sure.
Right, okay. And this is like back in the day, I assume, as well.
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, he's dead a good like 80 years or something.
So we can only assume the fence said something like no Irish or something like that. And he was like, no, best to keep it there.
We're not sure what it's for, but let's keep it there just in case it's keeping out some sort of filthy undertrass.
Yeah.
You never know when the Mongols might show
on the front of us. Yeah. Just like some horrible institution that he wants to keep.
Yes. Oh, you see, because I think all those people who were afraid of women getting the vote as well, if it was explained to them that we would get to keep oppressing them while they had the vote first, that I think you would have been fine with it. It's like, oh, they'll just vote whatever way I tell them, because if they don't, they're out in their ear. Oh, yeah, give them the vote. Conservatives don't look into the future, and they could see that it's a better future for all of us if you just oppress the right people at the right time and just tell them the right thing. Seems to be the move.
What can get in the bin, Mouse?
It's not that it can get in the bin. It's throw it in the bin now. It's advice for that thing that person you visited foisted upon you. The example I had was my mother came back from visiting a friend recently with a lovely head of lettuce that they'd grown in their own garden. And I told her to throw it in the bin now instead of in 2 weeks when it's moldy. Throw it in the bin now. Save yourself the time. Save yourself the smelly fridge. Save the conversation of what was this? Can we throw this out? Is this supposed to be fermenting? Save yourself the time. Throw it in the bin now. It's not always going to be lettuce from the garden. It might be like a tube full of like sugar that has some other color sugar spiraled around in it. You'll go, oh no, well, we'll save that for when. And then eventually you'll try to use it and you'll realize, oh, this is just rock solid. We can't use this. Throw it in the bin now.
Madness, I've got countless things that I actually do need to throw it in the bin now. Yeah. I discovered recently that vermouth goes off pretty fucking quickly, and I've had one for 18 months, so I need to throw that in the bin now. But it feels like a spirit. It feels like it should last forever.
Should last forever. That's
there are at least two open bottles of Baileys and one half bottle of Tia Maria in our drinks cabinet that didn't say the same thing. I know, but it goes in the drinks cabinet. It goes in the drinks cabinet, and that's for things that never go off.
Who's going through entire bottles of vermouth ever? That's not a bar. Good. Why do they even sell shops?
Yeah, like a half bottle of vermouth should be a thing. There's half bottles of sherry, which like make perfect sense. There's half bottles of wine. There should be half bottles of vermouth, but yet you can't get them anywhere. Another thing, there's an elderflower cordial. And I'm not sure where I sit on this. Like, it's mostly sugar, although I thought that about alcohol. Will that go off? James, as our resident Protestant, will elderflower cordial go off if stored in the fridge?
I think you're implying that we have a letter. Sit around that long. We're on that bad boy. it doesn't last a day.
Don't ask a Protestant about that. Like that's like asking a Protestant what to do with the Jews that have just moved into the neighborhood. He's like, you let them move in? What are you?
You've already fucked up.
I don't think they particularly dislike Jews. They dislike Catholics. It's well established. I don't know why I had to go with Jews. It's life. But throw it in the bin now is my point. Throw it in the bin now.
As soon as we get off this episode, I'm throwing away that vermouth.
Yeah. Like,
and I'm going to buy myself a fresh one that I'm going to let go off again.
Oh, yeah. Do buy a fresh one and let it go off again. But, like, save yourself the thought. Like, the day after you've made martinis, it's the longest possible time in between the next then and the next time you make martinis. Throw it in the bin then.
Yeah.
The best time to throw that opened bottle of vermouth in the bin was a year ago. The second best time was after that. But you know, it might be too late to throw it out now, but it will be even more too late tomorrow, as they say.
Right.
On the bottle of vermouth, it's in Italian, so it's hard to read.
Does anybody else so you have the lettuce in the fridge, I've got vermouth, Jack, James, what do you need to throw in the bin now that you haven't, or are you better than us?
This is a little different for me, but I did have something come to mind. So I've actually been pretty good about throwing stuff out, because my bin situation is I got to use the little bags that you pre-buy, so I often will be like, I'm like living by myself, so it's difficult to fill a bag with the stuff of one person. So I'll like very proactively empty the fridge of stuff. So that, and I also buy fuck all groceries and loads of Deliveroo.
Jack, what way do you think our bins work?
Wheelie bins.
I gotta fill up one of those bins with those bags. You know those ones that you have to pre-buy as opposed to
press the bin dispenser in your home.
Yeah. This bag's on credit, right? This bag's on credit.
No, I buy the little like.
No, yeah, I know what I know.
You don't even buy the little stickers anymore. You buy a bag that you just throw on the street, and then people pick it up.
I know what you're talking about. You have those pigeon and fox traps, yes, inner city bins. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So people throw out like 3 days before bin day and just expect it to be fine, and they're like, "Why is my street so dirty?"
Yeah.
What would the council do? Manage Flynn. And he only opens 3 or 4 bags just to make a point. He's not opening most of them. It's mostly
pigeons. His pigeons are opening the rest.
He seems like the kind
fly, of my pretties, fly.
Pigeons. Did you have something, Jack, there that you were about to say that you do need to do that's similar to that?
Well, I think it's mentally a similar exercise, where I actually recently got a housewarming gift from someone in the family, and they were very explicit. Like, there's a gift receipt in there. If you want to swap it out for something else, go for it. Now here's the problem that I'm in is that I'm in that same sort of moment of like, oh, maybe I'll use them. They got me some really nice mugs. They're like lovely decorated mugs. Now, I don't drink tea. I don't drink coffee, really. I already own 8 mugs, which is frankly probably too many for me anyway.
Mm.
But I can't bring myself to throw out the thing that someone got me. I can't bring myself to not use the lettuce.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that they were very explicit that they were totally cool with them.
Are any of your other 8 mugs a bit rubbish and you can just get rid of them?
There's 6 IKEA mugs and 2 other mugs I also got as a housewarming gift the same day from other members of my family.
Now, Jack, you need to embrace re-gifting. You need to embrace That's what housewarming gifts like are. What they're really giving you is, here's not having to do a trip to the shop the next time you have to go to a thing.
Zed Marins.
And yeah,
someone
like,
on
and,
the podcast is getting mugs.
Getting comfortable.
Super Santa.
Yeah.
I'll take it over another weird sex thing.
The thing about
Man, you can do weird sex things with mugs.
That's true. That's true. But at least I can pretend it's something else.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Good point. Good point.
Like the butt plug said butt plug on it. You could have at least like played the game and been like bespoke back massager.
But it wasn't that, it was a butt plug.
I know what it was. But like, give me a fig leaf for the love of God.
Yeah, pretend it's a Christmas ornament.
Yeah. Well, that sort of did feel that.
Your mum did. That's the only time the your mom did is the non-sexual version of the joke.
Yeah.
It's true.
I think embracing re-gifting could be a good thing here. And like, I think it, like when friends of mine started to get engaged, I started to see a lot more re-gifting happening. It's like, wait a minute, I got you that bottle. I got you that jug. I got you that. Blah, blah, blah. James, anything you need to throw in the bin now?
Like technically, again, it's something that could wait indefinitely, but I think
she's going to get more of your money the longer you leave it, James.
This is fridge / freezer based.
She's already in the freezer.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, do some meal prep and make a couple of meals for the week, and then stick one or two in the freezer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that'll be useful for some other time. Oh, they're all still there. Building up all these like frozen mounds of, what was at one point a like casserole or something.
Yeah.
How long does something like that last in the freezer? Because we've got like in our freezer like a bunch of what I can only assume is like mom makes this like a casserole out of the leftover Christmas stuff, and that's like and she didn't make one this year. But there are bags of it in the freezer.
I was going to say, it should be grand. It lasts months.
Yeah, I think the general advice is like 6 months, 3 to 6 months on freezing, which is a long window. But like if you pass the 6 month part of it, maybe it's time to take a long, hard look at that freezer.
It's to pass 6 months because they just go right in the back and just stay there.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you have to defrost it to even get them out of there because they're frozen in there.
What you guys both need is a smaller freezer. It really kind of focuses the mind as like, okay, right, I want to buy something frozen. All right, we're having chips tonight.
Brother, we have the tiniest freezer in the world. We're like, but it'll be like better eat all the ice cream. You know, we could throw out that thing that's no longer edible. No, we got to eat the ice cream now.
Otherwise, how are we going to fit this ice cream in?
Yeah, why did you eat 6 Tangle Twisters? Freezer's full. Freezers, they were not fun size. They were big.
Yeah, the first 2 were fun size, and then they became hard size.
Fun size inverts depending on how many of them you have to eat. Will the trick-or-treaters be back this year? Because that'll be something. I do miss basically eating an entire fun size bag of Snickers.
Because there's no kids around.
Yeah. Huh. And then even if they do ring and it's like, I've eaten all your candy, so I'm not welcome.
Can I write you a check, small child?
I used to not like those adults when I was, younger when they like come and like, so you wouldn't mind sometimes because they like give you money and you'd be like, oh, deadly cool, but you're clearly not answering the door again because you haven't got that much money. But now I know that those are the greatest heroes of all, those adults. Mm. They're like, here's a fucking toothbrush, and you think they're being an arsehole, but they just ate the sweets. Mm. And I get it.
Actually, this is my first year in a long time having a front door, and I'm out of town for Halloween. I didn't even think about that, and there's like loads of kids around here.
Yeah, you don't want to answer the door to those kids. It's all trick with them, buddy. There's no
I think it's going to be trick.
Government already gives them bleeding everything and they don't appreciate that. They're not going to not wreck your house for a fucking Twix.
Yeah. Oh, Jack. I think Manus is right here. I mean, when it starts, it's all like, consider yourself one of us. And then like after a while, this old man turns up and he's like really creepy.
Yeah.
It's what not I really even their do. Fault. Like they don't want to pick your pockets, but that man gets very frustrated if they don't.
He does. And he insists that you've got to pick a pocket or two.
Or two.
Like not just one per person.
What I really, actually on reflection, yeah, this is a blessing in disguise, because what I really don't want to do is show them all the nice things I have inside my house. Then they'll be back for more than the sweets.
Are you going anywhere spooky for Halloween, Jack? Or are you...
I've got two OTT shows Halloween weekend, so and the one the 31st is in Belfast.
No, the only thing spooky will be the low attendance numbers.
Hey, everything's selling out right now. We're delighted.
Anything, in fairness.
Those two shows aren't, because they did two shows in Dublin last weekend.
Plus, I've seen that building in Belfast, and there's a 24-hour garage down the road from it. I mean, how are you going to compete with that?
I know. People will go to anything that's open.
You know what I mean? They sell cigarettes and everything.
Lads, speaking of attending things, I'm gonna pull a switch reverse on it. I remember something we said we were going to talk about last week. Something that I did this week.
Oh yeah,
go see Dave Chappelle.
Oh yeah, shit. How was it?
It was pretty good. The thing that I realized about Dave Chappelle is, and particularly like late stage Dave Chappelle, is that it is very loose. And it is a man visibly just figuring it out on the fly and having a great time doing it and doing it quite well. But it did have real like end of an era or like end of a chapter vibes to it as well. That it was like, well, I ain't putting out a special for a very long time. I'm still going to be touring and doing comedy and shit, but fuck that. End of the contract. And now I can do whatever I want again.
We did think that might happen, being that he had just released a special, that it might just be him going like, figure it out.
Yeah,
because I'm not doing any of that stuff again.
Yeah.
Did any of you see his special?
I watched it the day before. I actually wasn't sure. I was injured and I was like, movement was hard, so I wasn't sure if I wanted to like make the trip over. So I only booked my flights the day before, and to motivate me, I watched the special, which was he's done that thing that I feel like George Carlin did, where it became less funny and more like opinion. And if you're already on board from the funny, you can enjoy that. At least his is not as like crazy as what Carlin got, but it's very much like entertaining lecture with Dave Chappelle.
Right,
which I personally am here for. But if you want the lols, there is more ha-has to be had elsewhere.
Yeah, because I was about to say the same thing. I can't very well have sat here and criticized as I did Bo Burnham's show, and then give Chappelle a pass just because I like him a little bit more. Because it was the same kind of thing. And like I can say, normally like the really lazy thing to do, because it was a controversial show as well. So the lazy thing to do is go, I just didn't find it funny. I wasn't a fan.
Funny.
But I really didn't find it that funny. He didn't. Even if you were like, even just looking for where the potential jokes were, there's like not that many of them. Like his entire thesis of the show is just, it's harder to be black than it is to be trans. And like, I'm not touching that argument with a fucking bar.
So
I'm not getting into whether he had a point there. But the ha-has weren't there, which was the problem. And I don't, and what's more, I didn't feel like he tried and failed. He just went off, and I guess he's earned the right to do that, and that's fine. And the people there, like, it was grand. Like, I wasn't sitting there bored, because he is a very good storyteller. The other thing is, Dave Chappelle, like, has this thing where he tells I don't think most, like, he tells these anecdotes that I'm fairly sure you aren't even supposed to believe. Like, they're supposed to be outrageous and not having happened. But then, like, the whole special kind of hinges, like, whether you come around to it, and a lot of it hinges on this story at the end, which is, it was quite a sad, and, you know, it was a, but then I'm just like, what? And I think it's true. I think the story he told is true, but he so often goes off into this mad stuff. Like, in the same show, he's like, so I slapped this bitch in the club. And I was like, I don't think that happened, Dave, because I think that would have been in the news if that had happened. So knowing that that's probably not true, when he tells this, like, really emotional bit at the end, I'm like, is that fake too? And if it isn't, then should it really be in the same show as the fake stuff? I mean,
the ambiguity kind of discredits the real... And as it amplifies the ridiculous. Yeah, I see what you mean.
But when the show is going to hinge on, and when it's kind of requiring to cut it, because really without that last bit, it is like he does say some stuff that can come across bad, like and without that, like it's like when Gil is trying to show off the carpet cleaner in The Simpsons, and he starts by pouring on the oil, and then she kicks him out of the house. You're really kicking me out at the worst possible time here. if that last bit doesn't land emotionally with you, and it's very hard for it to do so if you don't feel it's real, even if it probably is, then a lot of the earlier stuff is pouring oil on the carpet without getting a chance to show off this wonderful oil cleaner.
I think what I appreciated about Dave Chappelle, particularly after the live show, because it's my second time seeing him live, and it was at very different points in his career. The first show back was his comeback after that, those sort of missing 10 years. And this is very much sort of like he's kind of in a fuck it, I can do whatever I want stage again. And both are interesting for different reasons. But I think it really revealed the fundamental structure of his jokes. And it's actually what I like about him as a craftsman of jokes, as to how he can increasingly less subtly put a point inside a ridiculous story, where he'll say this outlandish thing and then reference it back to something that we all take for granted. And then when you see those two things side by side, you realize that the thing we take for granted is as ridiculous as the story that he told. And I think that that's actually quite a well, he had a couple of those very well-crafted stories mixed into that very, very loose set. And
the problem was they took like 35 minutes to happen.
Yeah, in the live, these ones were more like 10, 15 minutes, and they were funnier along the way. I think there was a lot more like fucking just effective ha-has, which I was a fan of.
And that's, like, those cheap but effective ha-has, like, are cheap, but they're not skillless. Like, Norm Macdonald, not to fucking keep going on about him, His later stage career was like full of those like long wandering shaggy dog jokes, but they always, every like 30 seconds there was a ha ha, and like that's what being a comedian is. Otherwise you're fucking, and like I liked him quite a bit. Otherwise you're Bill Hicks, who's just like shouting for for ages.
So I'm very clear. Dave Chappelle has not become Bill Hicks. He hasn't even become George Carlin. Two of my all-time greats. For me, the Holy Trinity are those two and Richard Pryor. As long as you can cut the last couple of years off the two white guys and just focus on the good shit.
Richard Pryor's last couple of years, from a personal perspective, weren't fucking great either.
But true. It didn't let it show on stage.
If anything, it probably amplified the stage stuff. It's like, he's shagging Brando?
So speaking of Norm as well, it's like, and how his late career like stayed good, or at least as far as it went, because like his most recent special, like he had like that joke he has about like Germany going to war with the whole world. Like I had that pegged in my head as being a much earlier joke, and when he died, Netflix started boosting his special again, so I rewatched like Hitler's Dog or whatever it was called.
But it was only what, 3-4 years ago maybe.
Yeah, and I was like, I forgot how much good stuff is in this.
Germany went to war with the world, and it was close.
it was close.
How was that funny? How was that funny and original in 2017?
Yeah.
And then they did it again. Germany not get to be a country anymore. It's like it was brilliant. And there was a bunch of that stuff where I was like, I thought I had that mentally penciled in as being earlier material. So a man in his early 60s was still putting out stuff of that quality. You know, there's a lot to be said.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah, and there's something to be said for I'm gonna keep fucking hammering my hobby horse. Despite what YouTube's algorithm thinks, it's a man who was fucking committed to the ha-has and nothing else. Like, yeah. You know, I think like it was humor above all. A purist. Whereas like Hicks, Carlin, Chappelle have all gotten more opinionated political. Yeah. They've gotten kind of like all old men who just kind of like, well, I don't know, want the world to be the way it is when they were at the very height of their power or whatever it is. I don't know, like I'm not psychologist anyway, but it just happens that like a lot of comedians tend to want something more than being a comedian, and shouldn't it be an end of itself? You know, like it's
you're right, Gavin. And you know what else it is? It's a trade-off problem that people don't recognize. So it's like trying to be a powerlifter but also be ripped. It's if you want to have the most like fucking incredible physique, you're going to sacrifice numbers, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're trying to be the funniest comic, but you're also trying to be like an advocate for like this way of life that may never have existed that you kind of miss, but whatever, you know, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
It's like cool. But you can tell in the show, it's like it is taking away from it. It's taking away from how good it could be. Yeah. And I'm willing to sit and listen to a George Carlin lecture because he kind of has earned it and he might have a perspective on something. But it is taking, it's like, and similarly, I might be willing to watch a race between six powerlifters to see who the fastest of them is, knowing none of them is the fastest. You know?
Yeah.
Because they've kind of earned it, because it is funny to see who can lift who, or it is interesting to see who can lift that giant thing can run the fastest.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting, but they won't be the fastest.
And like, it's just kind of interesting as well, because you're not getting, like, you know, Carlin and Hicks, I don't have as much of a grasp for as the others. I'll just go out and say it, therefore. But like, I don't know, like, you watch these comedians to be funny. Like, if you really want a lecture on like what society's like, go watch a fucking sociologist or a philosopher or something like that. But they're boring, you know?
Listen to it. Like, your college lecturer's jokes were shit.
Exactly. You wouldn't go watch a Tight Five by fucking Slavoj Žižek, you know?
Oh, Žižek on Letterman in 98 was a classic. Boring.
In an effort to never be replaced while I go on vacation, here's my temporary host, Slavoj Žižek.
Excellent. But I will say, I think Dave Chappelle is still on the correct side of that line. Like, he's not just lecturing. It is still pretty
funny. He's still funnier.
He is still funnier. And I think actually, you know, I think that series of six specials, that like that Netflix resurgence, will go down as a very important and relatively well-remembered chunk of comedy history.
I've only watched one of the specials. Like, I think I only watched the first one and then, like, didn't follow up with the rest of them. The first one is He Rapes But He Saves, isn't it? Like, it's not the title of it, but it contains the Cosby joke.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I think so.
Don't know what the title of it was, but the only thing I can remember about it is that joke.
He had one very poignant point in his special, I will say, because it doesn't involve me having to talk about the trans or black experience, and I'm just sorry not to have to do either of those things. But his point was about like punching down, and like I've always been irritated by that as a hard and fast rule anyway. Mm. And he kind of managed to say what I've always sort of thought without thinking about it, which was like, he was actually attributing the line to somebody else. He said that it can only be punching down if you consider yourself above those people. Think about it. I mean, like, so like if I'm, I used to get shit for using the word junkie, you know, in my set. It's where I coined the phrase gentleman of the needle, as if that made the fucking horrific thing they were involved in better. You know, if you call it something nice. But And punching down would always be specifically what I would be accused of. And I never really had the words to stand back and go, hang on, look at me. Do you think I think I'm better than them? Or do you think I think I'm making fun of my equals? Because I'll tell you what it actually is, you know? And then, so, I don't know. I thought that was quite poignant.
Yeah, I actually think that was the best made point of the whole thing. And I actually did speak to, and again, not touching with a barge pole because I don't have a valid opinion on this as a non-black, non-trans person. We spoke to someone who was trans who had read the discourse around it and I got that like very narrow view of it. And I hadn't read any of the stuff around it. I had seen a couple of headlines that it had been decried by a couple of very reputable organizations. And I was like, fair. And then when I saw it in context, I was like, I would feel that is a misrepresentation. There are valid criticisms, but that isn't one of them. And I think that if it is ultimately all in service of the point of his actual argument is around the discourse around the comedy and how he is accused of punching down. And that implies so much about his intent that it is not true. And I think it's actually the most interesting point he makes in the whole thing. I think Manus is absolutely spot on.
And invariably, people who spend their life criticizing comedy, and I do have to say, that's kind of what we're doing here. But still, they're the least funny people in the world.
I'll make another point.
Which we will admit to being.
I'll make another point about the live crowd. And this is what I had to admit during the like conversation with that particular trans friend. It was like, okay, yeah, he does this thing which I really love, which is he makes this ridiculous outlandish argument and then embeds some reality into it and makes the juxtaposition between those two things seem so ridiculous. You have to, that cognitive dissonance is where
this is why people who went to college shouldn't be allowed to go to comedy shows, Jack. Those words are too big.
I know. But here's the thing, Manus. I would say about at least 30% of the people in that room did not get that part of it. They were just like, yeah, Asian people do look a certain way.
that's always going to be a problem.
Is it Mark Twain who said like good satire, the best satire is indistinguishable from reality, or someone else? I don't think it's.
And ironically, Dave Chappelle won the Mark Twain Prize last.
I think it was Marilyn Monroe actually that said it, wasn't it?
No, it was Gandhi.
Was it?
That was Gandhi.
It was Gandhi.
I remember.
No, it was Gandhi quoting Marilyn Monroe, I believe.
Who had been inspired by an earlier Benjamin Franklin quote. Now we've got it.
Exactly. Yes. There it is.
Okay. That was long.
One other thing about the show. One thing I actually want to talk about the show is, has anyone been to a show where they lock up your phone?
No.
They lock up your phone. On the
it was called Clover Hill.
So what they do
they
is
give it back to you on the way out, but they do lock it up.
What they do is on the way in, there's this company called Yonder, obviously without the E because they're a fucking new company. And what they'll do is they'll take your phone and they'll put it in this little pouch and they'll tell you turn it off and they put it in this little pouch and they lock the pouch. They have like an electromagnetic lock on the pouch, a magnetic lock on the pouch, and then you just can't use your phone the entire time you're in the venue. There's little like smoking areas for phones where they will temporarily unlock it for you. But the entire time you're inside, it is a no phone experience.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's very awkward way of doing it. It's a shame that they have to do that.
But... Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. It's not that awkward because you actually keep your phone on you. They give you the pouch and you just put it back in your pocket. So you always have like possession of your phone. You don't, and it's like very, very quick. I think they've done the best possible version of the thing for right now.
I mean, what no one would ever consent to, but what way I would actually do it is there's no pouch, there's no anything. You bring your phone with you, no problem. But if I see that out of your pocket, there's a guy walking around and he's going to slap it out of your hand.
That's what they had at the first show I went to.
It would ruin one show. But once people realize that that was the rules, you know, you don't want to have your phone slapped out of your hand. In fact, that should be the rule. You have to take your phone out of its otter box or out of its casing or whatever, and you check that so that, like, you take out your phone, it's in its full delicate mode. So if it gets slapped out of your hand, you're getting a crack.
It's gone.
High risk. That's high risk. It was very cool. Well, honestly, it meant that no one was on their phone. Everyone was chatting, like, between the bits. And it ended up being quite a good night. Like Jeff Ross and Jimmy Carr were... In the opening of it, I think Aziz Ansari was just hanging out at the side. You could see him. It was weird. But I think
Jeff Ross is who I'm thinking of. I'm not his biggest fan. Is he the roast guy?
The roast.
He's
master.
The roast guy. Yeah.
They brought like a bunch of people on stage and did a roast thing. Yeah, it's a form of comedy that I'm like, yeah, okay, fine.
It's a cultural thing. I think the Americans.
It is.
I've never. I mean, I know we did. I know we did one, but when we do it, it's cute.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas, I think that roasts go down better in America because there's a general facade in all social interactions among Americans that we don't have here.
A fakeness to the entire culture. Is that what you mean?
A fakeness to the entire culture where there's sort of a toxic positivity and niceness that, I don't know, eats away at the soul.
Did you come up with that? That's a very good analogy. I never thought about it like that.
Just now, yes. I'm not sure how true it is.
You should start doing
it. Discovered it in the same way Columbus discovered America, which is cool. You know, he didn't know it was there. He didn't.
You should start doing stand-up, Gavin, and in 15 years make that point in a very boring lecture comedy show. I'll be here for it.
Yeah.
What do we think of the beers?
Really, 15 years? Wow, makes me think of... Yeah, what do we think of these fucking beers? I think that it could be fun. No, this beer is absolutely delicious. Whiplash Walk the Night, get it, whatever it is, wherever it is. It gets maybe a little bit kind of greasy or cloying at the end, I don't know, but that maybe just as it warms up. I found it like a pretty enjoyable experience throughout. 6.6%, cloudy, fruity, great texture. This is a 9. It's like among the good beers, it's not among the best beers. 9 out of 10 for me.
And if anything else, if that greasy thing, yeah, maybe drink it faster. Maybe have less fun with your friends. Go to somewhere with more boring people.
Yeah. I am drinking the Eternal Haze double IPA, double dry hopped IPA by the Wither Monk. It's fine. I'm usually quite a fan of the double IPAs and the triple IPAs. I don't really know what double dry hopping means. It means
they leave the hops out twice.
Yeah, they leave them to not go
they
in.
Never, yeah.
They keep them to the side, they keep them dry. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've enjoyed double dry hop stuff. I think we've had a few of them on in the last couple of months. This is good, not great. It's probably a 6.5 for me. The flavor is just kind of not there. It hides the alcohol well and it like goes down very smooth, but it's good. It's just good.
Yeah.
Same kind of score for the Curious Society and Multi Game. First taste was kind of overly bitter and unpleasant, but then it kind of faded into the background and was quite a good background beer, but no real strong feelings either way. I think 6.5 is about right.
I think we landed somewhere similar last week, James, as well, in and around the kind of 6.57 range.
So that leaves us with a total score of 16 for 3 different beers and a final countdown score.
So the episode rating matter. So the episode rating is 7.
How would you rate the episode? Listeners, tweet in.
We got to find out. We got to find out like exactly how many people are listening like the last week. There was like or whatever week it was. It was like 7 people who responded. When the show didn't go up till a day late, we got like 7 or 8 Twitter people going like, "Where's the show?" And that was
so we have 7 or 8 super fans.
More than I expected. I'll be honest.
What can they say? For every time someone talks to you on Twitter, there's another 5,000 listeners who don't talk to you, right?
So we could have up to 5 million listeners.
Hello, I'm going out to the sponsors tomorrow.
No, I don't. I don't need the Rogan deal, but I do need a substantial deal.
Guys, let's take
thank that. Thank you, Monsieur Spotify. He's French.
All right, guys.
He's apparently French.
Let's take that Wix money.
It's about
Let's
time.
Finally the, take that Wix money.
The website people or the people who do like the tools for traders?
No, Candle Wix. They make the part of the candle. Yeah. It's a very
buy them somewhere.
Yeah, one of the people who tweeted is the largest wax manufacturer in the world, so they really just want to get access to that guy.
God bless you. God bless you too, Mr. Waxman. And let us wax on and wax off with leaving us only one thing to cheers to, and that is to someone who I think is really at the top of his game and still on the right side of everything, and that is Mr. Miyagi.
Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah. Either live long enough to see yourself become a villain
or you live long enough to see yourself become Mr. Miyagi. Yeah.
Or die before the Netflix series comes out.
I figure it's as well he died before Donald Trump. I think he seems like the kind of guy who you'd go, where is he? Then you'd Google him and you'd find out, oh, he's a MAGA guy now.
Yeah.
Mr. Miyagi.
There it is.
Oh, fucking, why is it not in the episode?
It is, I mean, now. It's a funny joke that I made, so I'll probably go out of my way to get it in there.
It'll be the first thing you hear on Thursday. Yeah,
it probably will. It might be the only thing. If it's the high point, it might be the only thing.
And cut!
Good enough. Splice in some reaction shots of me and shove it on the air.